What I'd like to do is to spend some time with you on a subject that I think is of interest, but the point of my presentation is not just for the specific subject matter, but also as a model of the kinds of teachings that we do at Yeshiva University, which means to relate together substantive Jewish scholarship with academic scholarship. That we understand that we're living in a world of Torah, and living in a world of Torah, in the kind of world in which we live, requires an understanding of and an appreciation of the nexus, the connections between this world and the larger world, between the world of Judaism, the world of Torah, the world at large. Rabbi Blau is an exceptional and extraordinary representative, one of the leading thinkers in our community that represents that approach to understand solid, rock-solid Torah, and to understand that rock-solid Torah unfolds today within the context of a larger world. So that's the methodology, the larger methodology that I'd like to work through with you. And I want to give you a particular case study. Let's start with the Gemara in Masechet Sota. I gave you the English translation just because I gave you the English translation. And we'll start at the bottom. I also want to welcome the wonderful young men from Australia who are here, who fell in on this day. Which city in Australia are you from?
Sydney,
Australia. Which school do you go to?
Moriah.
So I had the privilege last summer of spending a week in Sydney, Australia, and I actually spoke in the Moriah school. I spent a week in Melbourne and a week in Sydney, and it was an incredible experience. You have a magnificent community. Benji Levy, is that a name that's familiar to you?
Yes.
Rabbi Benji Levy was my host, and it's a pleasure to see you again. Sota Daf Memches Amid Beis, fourth line. I want to start with this Gemara, and then I want to use this Gemara for a larger perspective. Here is the issue. Background. The Kohen Gadol wore a choshen. The Kohen Gadol wore a plate on his chest that had stones on it, and on the stones were the names of the tribes. Now, the issue is an arcane issue. The issue doesn't seem to be a particularly important and relevant issue for us right now in December of 2018, but I want to show you how you could draw conclusions from parts of Torah that on the face of it seem to be irrelevant, to become extremely relevant. The stones on the choshen, on the chest of the Kohen, had the names of the tribe. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, a different name on each stone. The issue that the Gemara is addressing, how did the names of the tribes get onto the stones? What did it look like? Physically, what's the reality? How did it happen that each stone had names on it? Now let's look at the Gemara. Follow in whatever way is comfortable for you. Mivoy lechidetanya. Avonim halalu ein kosvin otan bidio. Dio means ink. What's the simple option? Take ink and write down the names of the tribes on the stones. Write it on. Says the Gemara, not an option. You can't write it on because mishum shenemar pituche chotam. Because they had to be engraved. The Torah tells us that the names of the tribes needed to be engraved on the stones. You couldn't just write it. Write it is just on the surface. You can't engrave it. If you can't engrave it, it doesn't work. It has to be engraved. So if it has to be engraved, continues the Gemara, so then what should I do? I should take a little hammer roll, a little chisel, and sort of engrave the names. If you're an artisan and you have a stone, You can engrave letters onto the stone. So maybe that's my option. Says the Gemara, not an option. Mishum shenemar mi lu otam. The stones have to be complete. The stones have to be full stones. What's going to happen if you engrave? Tell me. What's going to happen if you engrave? You chisel out the space, and then it's not complete. You have to get rid of part of the stone in order to create the indentation for the engraving, and we're going to lose pieces of the stone. No good. So we now have a dilemma. How are we going to get the names of the tribes on the stones? You'll forgive me. We're between a rock and a hard place. Are you familiar with Australians? Are you familiar with that? Is that an expression? Good. We're stuck. We're stuck. We don't know how to get the names on the stones. Says the Gemara, I'll tell you what happened. Says the Gemara, what they did was, Ella Koteva Lehem B'diyo, they would outline it in ink, and then, continues the Gemara, Umare Lahen Shamir Mibachutz, Vehen Nikbaot Me'elehen. They outlined the letters of the names of the tribes, and they brought the Shamir. Raise your hand. Anybody know what is the Shamir? Yes. What is it? It's some kind of a something. Some kind of a wormish something animal that was magical. And how did they cut the big stones for the Beit HaMikdash? How did they cut the big stones for the Mishkan? How did they manage in prehistoric times? So they took this thing and they put it on top of the stone. All of a sudden, lo and behold, it cut the stone. The whole sugi here in the Gemara at the end of Sota is about the Shamir. So it's in the context of this discussion, the Gemara tells us that's how they got the names of the tribes on the stones. Because they took the Shamir, and then, says the Gemara, Vehein Nikbaot Me Alehen, they just opened up. So nothing was lost. The stone was totally intact, but it separated in order to be able to create the letters of the names of the tribes. Okay, are you with me? Adkan de Gemara, that's what I want to extract from this passage. How did they get the names of the tribes on the stones? On the one hand, they couldn't just stencil it on because it had to be engraved. On the other hand, they couldn't engrave it the way you normally engrave because you would lose some pieces of stone. No problem. Magic. They outlined the letters. They brought the Shamir. It just split open. So it's engraved and it's full. Please remember this Gemara. Page 2. We now move to a passage of the Taz to Rei Zahav commentary on Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. So the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, that was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo, who lived in the 16th century, has four parts. The second part is called Yoredeya, and in Yoredeya there's a section about Hilchot Sefer Tov. How do you write a Sefer Tov? Commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, says the Taz. Taz, anybody know what Taz stands for? Commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. I saw a hand. Turei Zahav. Extra Sufganiya, left over from Hanukkah for this guy. Turei Zahav. What was his name? His mother did not call him Tazala. What was his name? Anybody? Yes. David Halevi. When did he live? 17th century. He died in 1667. I'm going to give you the dates of death of the four sources, the three sources I want to share with you. Not that you need to know and remember the day of death, but I want to show you the chronological unfolding of this presentation. Rabbi David Alevi, who lived smack in the middle of the 17th century in Poland, he died 1667, says the following, left side of page 2. The issue that he's addressing is printing. Printing. When was printing invented? Printing didn't come down from Sinai. When was printing invented? In the middle of the 15th, who said that? In the middle of the 15th century, by whom? By Johannes Gutenberg. Where did he live? In Germany. Excellent. Middle of the 15th century, Johannes Gutenberg invents printing. By the end of the 15th century, we have the first Hebrew printed books. We're now, a little bit later, we're now in the middle of the 17th century. Question, what is the halachic status of a printed book, of a printed Shulchan Aruch, of a printed Chumash? Step back for a second. What's the halachic status of a Chumash in the Aron Kodesh? What happens of a Sefer Torah? You can't use it anymore. What do you have to do with it? You have to bury it. You cannot what? Just throw it away. Why? Because it has what? It has kedushah. It has sanctity. A mezuzah. You can't use anymore. You have to put it in what's so-called shemos. You have to put it away. You have to bury it. Tefillin. You have to bury it. A sefer Torah. You have to bury it. What's the halacha of a book, a chumash? What's the halacha of a chumash? What's the halacha of a gemara? This now, after many years of use, becomes not usable anymore. It's all torn. Am I allowed to throw it away? Or do I have to bury it? Now, they didn't know the answer to this question yet, because printing, this was a new invention. So does this have a halacha of a written, say, for Torah, tefillin, mezuzah? Or not? Or is it printed? There are two categories that the Gemara gives us. And I'm going to give you the technical term. One is called kitiva, which means writing. And one is called chakika, which means engraving. The Gemara says in Maseches Gittin, on Daf Chaf, v'katav la sefer kritut, that there's something called kitiva. You have to write a bill of divorce when a husband and a wife no longer could live together. It has to be written, says the Gemara. Katav velo chakak. You can't engrave it. You can't take a piece of wood and engrave the letters for the get. It has to be written. So our two options are kitiva or chakika. If it's kitiva, like a Sefer Torah, it's written, it's a manuscript, it's a scribe, it's a sofer, then it has kedusha. If it's chakika, it does not have kedusha. Question, does printing have the halacha of kitiva or chakika? Is printing considered writing? In which case a printed book, like an old Sefer Torah, has to be buried? Or is it considered chakika, engraving, in which case it does not have to be buried? Says Rabbi David Halevi. You understand that the Shulchan Aruch really didn't deal with this. In the days of the Shulchan Aruch, it was too early to deal with this. So he says here, the chakika, on the left side of page 2, the chakika, about 5 lines before the arrow, ha'ilva saliyadan nema ba'milsi. While we're talking about how do you write a Sefer Torah, I want to say something. Lefi she'shamati omrim, because I heard people were saying, she'ein bisfarim ha'nitfasim kedusha kimo ha'nechtavim bichtav. I heard people saying that a printed book really is not like a Sefer Torah, and therefore a printed book does not have kedusha, and therefore a printed book does not have to be buried. That's what I heard people say, but I disagree. For me, a printed book has a halacha of kitiva and not chakika, and therefore a printed book, And that's what we do today. That's the halacha. You can't just throw it out. You have to put it in so-called shemos. You have to bury it. And I will prove it to you from the Gemara in Sota that we just read. I will prove to you, says the Taz. Died 1667, middle of the 17th century. I'm going to prove to you that printing has a halakha of writing and not engraving from this Gemara. The Gemara that talks about how did they get the names of the tribes on the stones of the Choshen of the Kohen. What's the proof? Here's a great example of using a rabbinic text and bringing it into the modern world. The text has nothing to do with what you would imagine is relevant to making such a determination. And in fact, he argues, Rabbi David Halevi, that it has everything to do with making this determination. He quotes the Gemara. What's the Gemara review? How did they get the names of the tribes on the stones? They couldn't just write it, because it had to be engraved. They couldn't classically engrave it in the regular pattern, because you would lose some pieces of stone. So they brought the shamir. Now take a look. The im ita, three lines from the bottom of the narrow lines on the left side. After quoting the Gemara, he says as follows. The im ita, I want you to listen carefully. And I want you to tell me, please, when I'm done, does this make sense to you? I'm now inviting you to ask yourself, does this make sense? And I want to hear from you. Here's what he says. I quote the Gemara. V'imitan, if you're going to tell me the masad for savachakika, if you're going to tell me that printing is like engraving, and if it's like engraving, it does not have the same kedusha as kitiva, if you're going to tell me that that's the case, kosher. Mino londa hoya al yedei shamir. Shehu davar she'eino motzui. Why did the Gemara have to say, how did the Gemara get out of this problem? They brought a shamir. A shamir, no, who has a shamir? Shamir is davar she'eino matzui. Nobody has a shamir. It's not like everybody has a pet shamir in their backyard. It's crazy. It's one in 12 trillion. Why did they have to go all the way to the Shamir to solve the problem of how they got the names of the tribes on the stones? I have a much simpler matter. Dilma hoya al yedei hadafus ubidiyo kidafus shalanu. It's a simple way how to do it. You print it on. If printing is engraving, they could have printed the names of the tribes on the stones and you would have solved your problem. Says the Taz, simple. Maybe it was on Yedei Hadufus printing. Ubidiyo with ink. Kidufus shelanu, like our printing. Venimtza shapir mitkaye pituchei chotam. So it's engraved and nothing is missing. You solve the problem. There's no issue here at all. If printing is called engraving, so I have to engrave it. So print it, and that's engraving, so I engraved it. And I haven't missed anything. The fact that the Gemara does not use that as an option, says the Taz, Ela Barur. What's the word Barur mean? Absolutely crystal clear. The Ma'aseh HaDefus Mikre Ketiva Mamish V'lo Chakika Klo. Must be, because printing is writing. If printing is writing, it's not going to help me to get the names of the tribes on the stones through writing. Because writing isn't what's going to do it for me. What do I need? I have to engrave it. The fact that the Gemara does not use printing to solve the problem is a raya. That printing halachically wouldn't work. Because printing is writing and not engraving. This is the statement by Rabbi David Halevi. Poland, middle of the 17th century, and therefore we now understand the halachic status of printing. It has the same status as a Sefer Torah, so a printed chumash that you can no longer use has to be treated with the same kiddushah as a Sefer Torah, and it has to be buried. Okay, beloved gentlemen, what do you think? Anybody have any reaction to the statement of the Taz? Yes? Anybody? He said, what's your name?
Yoni.
What's your last name, Yoni? Where are you from, Yoni?
Boca.
Good, welcome, Boca. Is he related to you? You know him, though. We're all related. We're all related. We love each other. We're all related. What'd you say?
Why you honest?
Why you honest? Now I know why. Okay, come to my class. Wait a minute. Rabbi Halevi, what are you talking about? They didn't have printing. They didn't have printing yet. When did they get printing? In 1450 they got printing. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? They could have used printing. And he even says, Kidafus Shalanu. Wait a minute, the Fush Shalanu didn't parachute into the world until 1650, until 1450. So you can't bring a proof from the fact that they didn't use printing as an option to talk about the status of printing. You know why they didn't use printing as an option? Because they didn't have printing. Azoiza Yoni Shlita, a beautiful Talmud in Oraita, Baruch Hashem, made the right decision to come to Yeshiva University. Okay, yes.
Is there any discussion about what they qualify as degrading?
We just have two categories, Ketiva and Chakika. Those are the two halachic categories.
But if it said that it must be writing, there wouldn't be necessarily a need to say it can't be engraving.
Since those are the two options, chakika and ketiva, it's the ketiva option that has kedusha, the chakika option that has no kedusha, and I'm proving to you, says the Taz, that printing is in the ketiva option, because were it in the chakika option, it would have been able to be used to put the names on.
What about digital engraving?
We're in the 17th century. We're in the 17th century. Right. Give me, hold that thought. Anybody else want to comment? There were a couple of hands. Yes.
Yeah.
How much time do I have?
Just tell me. 11:45, is that good?
Yeah, that's great. Why?
I think one could argue that they did have a form of printing in the signet ring, in the sense that like, you can mass produce something written. And they do mention it in it. They just don't mention it as a form of writing on the chosen. In the Gemara, they mention the signet ring, but they mention engraving the signet.
Yes, so that's an excellent point. Thank you. So let me, your name?
Benjamin.
Where are you from, Benjamin?
Long Beach, New York.
Wonderful. Welcome to Oraita. You having a good year? Okay, good. Good. Wherever you go next year, I love you. If you came to YU, it would also be wonderful. Okay, now. Yes.
So when the stones in the form of chakika,
the stones were created through chakika.
So would they have had to be buried?
No. Yeah, I would say probably. Yeah, probably.
So how come?
But yet they don't get rusty. They don't get worn out. They're durable. So I don't think it's really an issue. But theoretically speaking, it's a davar shebik kedusha. It's something that has holiness. And I think just in and of itself, it would be required to be treated in a holy fashion. Page 3. Turn to page 3. Shelot u'tshuvot chavot Yair. Are you with me? Top of page 3. Shelot u'tshuvot chavot Yair. Author, Yair Chaim Bachrach. I apologize that I didn't write the name of the author on the page. Yair Chaim Bachrach, who died in 1702. When did the Taz die? You can forget it already, it doesn't matter, but if you remember, it's amazing. 1667. Rabbi Bachrach died in 1702. Rabbi Bachrach was born and raised in Worms in Germany. Very, very famous city in Germany, very significant for Jewish life, on the Rhine Valley, the city of Worms. His father and his grandfather were the rabbis of Worms. He wanted more than anything else in the world to be, guess, the rabbi of Worms. and they didn't let him. He was very upset. He had to wander for many years. Finally, in 1699, he was old and he was blind. The Balabatim, the community, said, okay, you could become the rabbi in Worms. He became the rabbi in Worms. He was a rabbi for how many years? If he came in 1699, for 3 years, he died. He's buried in the cemetery in Worms. Have any of you been to, any of you from Germany? Any of you been to the city of Worms? Speyer, Worms, Mainz, massive cities of incredible significance in medieval Jewish life. He's buried today. You can go. I was there not long ago to the Jewish cemetery in Worms. There's a beautiful matseva for Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachra. He addresses the question of the halachic status of printing. And he says the following. He says, and now on the left-hand side, he says, printed material perhaps is not treated always exactly like a Sefer Torah or Tefillin or Mezuzah. And he quotes the Taz. He quotes the Taz. And he says, the Taz says that printed is like a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah, right? That was the Taz's position. It has the halacha of Ketivah. But he says the rationale of the Taz makes no sense. Let's look inside. Shehein b'defus. It's now on page 3 where it's underlined. It's about a third of the way down. Where at the end of the line there's a bracket with a pei yud, with piresh. It's about a third of the way down. Shehein b'defus. Shenitchadesh bizmanenu mikarov toch reish shana. In the last 200 years, there has been this new invention called printing. And he quotes the position of the Taz, but he disagrees with the position of the Taz. Afki, skip a few lines. La'aniya daiti, the last of the underlying parts in this passage. Even though I believe, ein ho chachato klum, the proof of the Taz is not correct. Even though I agree with him that printing has the status of writing and therefore it does have kedusha and not engraving, but I disagree with his proof. Ein hochachato klum. His rationale, his proof is meaningless. Why? Mitnei shelo yadu'u lifnei shin shana me'inyan hadufus. Because 300 years ago they never heard of printing. That's the critique of the Chavot Yair on the Taz. You can't bring me a proof from the fact that they didn't use printing to put the names of the tribes on the stone. It's a raya that printing is considered to be ketiva, not chakika. It's very simple. They didn't use it because they didn't have it. Are we good? So far, so good. We have the Taz and we have the Chavot Yair. Next source. Bottom right, Knesset Yecheskel. What was his name? Yecheskel. You get a hint. Yecheskel. Who said that? Somebody here said Yecheskel. You don't want to... You say Yecheskel. Excellent. What's your name?
Tommy Losgoof.
Where are you from? It's amazing. Beautiful. So that's Weinbaum or now Katz? Is that where you're coming from? Now Katz. Beautiful. Okay. What was his last name? Katzenellenbogen. How's that? He died 1749. Rabbi Yecheskel Katzenellenbogen was the chief rabbi in Hamburg in Germany for about 32 years until he died in 1749. He attacks Rabbi Bachrach for attacking the Taz. Hang in there, we're on a ride now. The Taz said, I'll bring you a proof about the status of printing because they didn't use it to put the names of the tribe. Said Rabbi Bachrach, what did Rabbi Bachrach say? No proof. The reason why they didn't use it is because they didn't have it. Says the Knesset Yecheskel. He quotes the Chavot Ya'ir, and he says the following. It is the last underline on the bottom right of page 3. U'b'mechilat kivodo. Translate, mechilat kivodo. B'mechilat, mechilat means forgiveness. Kavod means honor. With all forgiveness, do his honor. The English expression is, with all due respect. Now you know that if somebody comes over to you and says, Rabbi Blau, with all due respect, that's the end of the respect. We're done with the respect. With all due respect, I mean, I took the respect, shoved it in the corner, and now I'm going to go after him. I paid my respects. Now that I paid my respects, that's it. All bets are off. Put on your raincoat, because it's happening. That's exactly what happens here. He attacks Rabbi Bachra. With all due respect to Rabbi Bachra, listen to this. Now I'm going to ask you, what do you think about this? What did Rabbi Bachrach say? The reason why they didn't have printing is why? Why didn't they print the names of the tribes on the stones? Because they didn't have printing. Because printing was not yet, what? Invented. Says Rabbi Katzen Ellenbogen, what are you talking about? V'chi Moshe Rabbeinu Mem Reish Ayin He. V'chi Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom. Asher Diber Pei Aleph Pei Panim El Panim. Are you trying to tell me, Rabbi Bachrach, that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest of the great, who taught to God, G-O-D, maybe G-D, who talked to God face to face, Ushlomo, and are you trying to tell me that King Solomon, Asher Alav Ne'emar Vayechka Mikol HaAdam, the Bible testifies that Solomon was the smartest human being ever to walk on the face of this earth. Are you trying to tell me that Moshe, who talked to God face to face, that Shlomo, who was a brilliant genius of the highest order ever, are you trying to tell me lo yadu lahamtzi chokhmat hatfus, that they couldn't invent printing? Ad shekam chacham umot haolam, until some Gentile showed up and invented printing? What, some guy had to invent printing? What, you think they couldn't invent printing? You think Gutenberg was smarter than Moshe? You think Gutenberg was smarter than Shlomo HaMelech? Of course they could have invented printing. Why did they not invent printing? Because it wouldn't have helped them. Because they still could not use printing to put the names of the tribes on the stones. Why? Because printing is writing and not engraving. So Rabbi Bachrach, you're wrong. Who's right? The Taz is right. You can bring a proof from that Gemara, the fact that they didn't use printing to put the names of the tribes on the stones is a riot that it wouldn't work. Aye, what are you going to tell me? Duh. They didn't have printing. They could have had printing in a nanosecond. Moshe Rabbeinu could have said, we're inventing printing. Shlomo HaMelech could have invented printing. That the way 2,468 years till Gutenberg woke up and invented printing. Why did they not invent printing? Because halachically, printing wouldn't have helped. This is Rabbi Katzen Ellenbogen. Any reactions to this? Any reactions? Yeah.
I'm not sure how strong that argument is. Like, they didn't not invent printing. For, like, you could argue they were, sure they were brilliant, but like, the fact is, Gutenberg stood on the shoulders of giants before.
Excellent, excellent. What's your name?
Noah.
Noah, where are you from?
Baltimore.
Baltimore. Okay, it's still a B, but it's Baltimore. Okay, good. Yes, yes.
This might be a more weak raya, but like...
But the one, his raya or your raya?
Weaker than Noah's
raya. A weaker, yeah.
But if Moshe really could have invented printing, wouldn't it have been useful to print the Torah so every Jew could have access to it? And then it wouldn't have...
It would have been easier. Yeah. If you could have invented printing, it would have been easier, it would have been cheaper, it would have been... easier to publicize. So why did he make it so difficult? He could have invented printing. What else could Moshe Rabbeinu have invented? Maybe The internet. What else could it be invented? Forget the internet. The internet. Could have invented a cure for cancer. Why didn't he invent? Could have invented anything. Shlomo HaMelech. Why are we suffering? Could have invented everything. Polio vaccine. Yes.
I also think that adding on to Noah's point that you have to take into context and timing.
Yes.
Einstein's not is a genius despite him not having invented artificial time. Just taking into context his time. It doesn't mean that Shlomo Malek wasn't a genius, just his time.
Excellent. So you're supporting Noah's position. Yes, excellent. You're back. With pleasure.
I've heard the popular idea that a lot of ideas in the Torah are simplified to make sense to a such as, like, I wouldn't go into the biology of evolution and how animals were created, how people have evolved, as science has shown, because Mesos necessarily...
You'll raise that with Rabbi Blau, that particular assumption, and therefore what?
So given that there's already, if assuming that you agree with that, then isn't that already one clue that Mesos is necessarily at the level of comprehension that we are today, as we are able to do such an understanding?
So you're following the previous points of context. Context of time.
Not necessarily.
So then, hold that thought. Anybody else want to comment? Final comment on this point. Your name, please.
Sam,
where are you from?
L.A.
Wonderful. Welcome to Orenta. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Pretty good. Only pretty good. Come on, it's December already. You got through Hanukkah. It's rocking. It's rocking. Do all of you know the gift that you have that you're here? Do you, like, get how amazing it is that you're here? Here means first in Israel. Here means second in Yerushalayim. Here means third in the Eir Atika. And here means in Oraita. This is unbelievable. Pinch yourself. Take a second and just pinch yourself. Oh my God, I can't believe it. It's amazing that you're here. Yes, as you were saying. Before I interrupted you.
If you say that Moshe could have invented anything,
yes.
Like also opens up the kind of description that they're not that great people. If Moshe
they're not that what?
Like, seems to Paul's question, their like morality, their status is like incredible people. Like, Moshe could have invented modern medicine, but let all those people die. Like,
right, so that was the point I mentioned earlier. If he could have invented anything, why is there so much suffering? Why are people ill? Excellent. Last source, Maharatz Chayot. Final source, concluding source. Bottom left, page 3. Maharatz Chayot, his name was Tzvi Hirsch Chayes. He died in the 1850s. He died 100 years after Rabbi Katzenelenboim. And he's our final source. The Maharatz Chayot, Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, was a maskil. A maskil means, first of all, he was a massive Talmid Chacham, a huge rabbinic scholar. If you go to the back of any standard edition of the Gemaras that are on your tables, you'll find Chidushim of the Maharatz Chayos on Shas, on Talmud. And he wrote Shuvot. There are two volumes, Kol Kitvei Maharatz Chayot, essays and discussions and Shuvos, a rock star Talmud Chacham. He also was already in the middle of the 19th century, began to be exposed to the world around him. He had some connection with university studies, and he saw a larger understanding of the world. And he says as follows, final source, the Ode, where it's underlined, the Ode. Kvodo hagadol shel harav Knesset Yechezkel b'mekomo munach. Translate, kvodo b'mekomo munach is the exact same meaning as b'mechilat kvodo. You take the kavod and you stick it in the corner, and now you can say whatever you want. Rabbi Chayes goes after Rabbi Katzenelenbogen for going after Rabbi Bachrach, for going after the Taz. Full circle. What did Rabbi Katzenelenbogen say? Of course they could have invented print. Of course they could have invented. The fact that they didn't proves that it wouldn't have helped. Says Rabbi Chayes, exactly the points that you made before. Udvarav bazeh einam rak min hamatmihim. It's just astounding what he said. V'lo zahaderech lefalpel kazeh b'mashe nogea letotzaot lehotzaot hadinim. When you analyze an issue, this is not how you talk. The reasoning that you're giving makes no sense whatsoever. And listen to the language. Be'emet, he says, you are 100% right. Ki Moshe Rabbeinu lo kam kimoto b'nevuah. You're 100% right. Moses was the greatest prophet ever, ever. Ushlomo lo kam kimoto b'chochma. And Shlomo was the smartest person ever. Ulam however, Hashem yitbarach hebit v'ra'a me'reishit. God looks from the beginning. And God looks out at the world. And now I'm going to use a phrase that's my interpretation of what he's saying. God sets up the unfolding of human knowledge. Human knowledge unfolds in a various pattern, in a stages. God looks from the beginning. Ugevulot chalak l'chol hazmanim v'hadorot. And every generation sees a development, a further development of wisdom and of knowledge. And not all times are equal. There are times when it's very slow, where it's very lazy. You know, from the year 500 to the year 1700, there wasn't that much going on. There wasn't that much going on from the year 300 to the year 1200. You have the same animal and you have the same plow and you got not a lot of technology happening. It's a little lazy, slow time. And the itim mimalalim bitvuna uba'aleha chochma v'hasgula mirubim. And then there are times, oh my God, it just explodes. Do you know that when I was born, there was no such thing as the internet? Do you know that? Can you imagine? Do you know that when I was born, they didn't have this? Do you know that like 15 years ago, they didn't have this? In the last 20 years, explosion. Twitter and Facebook and internet and iPhones and an eye this kind and an eye that kind. We never had this. All of a sudden, it blew. There's some generations. For centuries, nothing's going on. And sometimes you just get an explosion. I have a 4-year-old grandson. He says to me, Zaidi, I want to play with your phone. So I'm embarrassed as I had a BlackBerry. I had a BlackBerry. You don't even know what a BlackBerry is. You never heard of a BlackBerry. I had a BlackBerry. It's like a flip phone. He takes my phone and he goes like this on the phone. And nothing happens. He says, Zaidi, it's broken. The phone is broken. Now, Baruch Hashem, I upgraded. Now I give him my phone and he's off and running. This is just like in the last 6 minutes. There are some generations when nothing happens. There's some generations when a lot happens. Ve'ein lecha davar she'ein lo zman u'makom. Everything has its place. Ve'akol b'ritzon Hashem yitbarach. Shehu korei hadorot merosh. This is called, 19th century this develops, it's called the notion of progress. The notion of progress is the notion of things built on things that came before. And so therefore he argues, you're right, Moshe and Shlomo were the greatest of the greatest of the great. But it would have been impossible for them to invent printing. Not because they weren't smart. Because in order to know printing, you got to know this, and you got to have this, and to have this, you got to have that, and to have that, you need that. It's all a development. It's all an unfolding of this. And since it's all an unfolding, it's not a chisorum. It's not disrespectful to Moshe and to Shlomo to say they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. Now, if they couldn't do it, that means that we didn't have it, and we couldn't have it. Which is the reason why they did not use printing to put the names of the tribes on the stones. You know why? Because they didn't have it. And so therefore Rabbi Bachrach is right and the Taz is wrong. No proof. You can't bring me a proof. Chazara, the Taz says, I'll prove to you that printing is a halacha of Ksiva and Chakika, because if it has a halacha of Chakika, they would have used it to put the names of the tribes on the stones. Says Rabbi Bachrach, what are you talking about? They didn't have it. Says Rabbi Katzen Ellenbog and wash your mouth out with soap. Machutzav. How dare you say that? Shlomo could have invented it. Moshe could have invented it. Of course they could have had it. Says Rabbi Chayes, no. They're the greatest. But they could never do it because things unfold. There's a notion of practice. I want to conclude just by showing you a blog on Atlantic Magazine. I gave this talk, an iteration of this talk a couple of years ago, and there was a guy there by the name of Alan Jacobs who writes a blog on Atlantic, theatlantic.com. And I want you to turn to page 5, and I want to read you one paragraph. I'd like you, when you have a moment, to read the whole thing, because it's really fascinating. He summarized this presentation in the middle of page 5. Rabbi Schachter took us, he's now giving a report on a talk that he heard me give to a group of people that he was present. Rabbi Schachter took us on a virtuosic whirlwind tour of these texts, demonstrating that Cairo, the Taz, and their successors became consumed by the question of what we may call the conditions of technological possibility. This is now a summary of my presentation. The issue is the conditions of technological possibility. Why was there no printing press in the time of the patriarchs or of the sages of the Mishnah? Were these not great and wise men, men who talked with God, who could have invented the printing press had they thought it appropriate to do so, or had God so instructed them? And was not their failure to do so an indication that the printing press is to be shunned? Not so much shunned, but superfluous, is irrelevant. Some thought so. But others replied, no, not at all. Now comes the summary of Rabbi Chayes. The fact that these men were great sages who knew God did not mean that they could overleap the state of their own age. Technology develops incrementally in any given culture. And even the wisest men of God have no power to escape those conditions. Rabbi Chayes' argument, I think, really exquisitely formulated. Technological history and sacred history connect and sometimes overlap, but are essentially distinct. And so we have a case study of the larger issue, and the larger issue is the nature of the intersection between the world in which we live and our Jewish commitments. And it is that we devote an enormous amount of time to at Yeshiva University. We live in two worlds. We'd love to see you wherever you end up. We love you. We'd love to see you at YU. You should have a tremendous hatzlacha and bracha. And don't let this man and Rav Judah alone. You have them for the next couple of months. Just get whatever you can from them. You have a gift that you don't even begin to realize. And I just want to tell you, we stand in our community a lot on the shoulders of this man who has contributed enormously to the understanding of what it means to be Jewish and a Ben Torah in the larger world. We are on the shoulders of Rabbi Dardik, who had an incredible, incredible career as a pulpit rabbi, who is on fire for Judaism, who is an amazing mechanech and teacher. Grab them, hold on to them, enjoy them, and I wish you all the best. Anybody who has a question, come over to me now. I don't want to hold up everybody else. Have a wonderful day.